Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and director of the acclaimed and award-winning short film, 9mm of Love.
What?
Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Oh my gosh.
The award-winning. Yes, that was my first short film. It was actually my second short film. My first one was so bad.
I was going to say Battery, but I went to the film festival with you for 9mm of Love, not the Battery.
Sorry, remember? I messed it up.
What?
Battery was my first short film, and then 9mm was my second.
Was the second. You did
but
say
I
second.
I actually did one before.
Oh, you did?
One before that, yes.
Oh,
That is called The Book of Logic, based on a joke that Ethan told me one time. And I literally wrote a 5-minute short based on this joke. I'm like, oh my gosh, I should just, that'll be my short film. And I shot it and it was horrible.
Why was it horrible? Because of the
bad, it was like a bad, it wasn't much of a story.
So you took his joke. And you just filmed the joke. You scripted the joke, right?
As a story, like a narrative.
As a narrative. Okay.
Yeah, it was about this guy. I can't even remember the plot of it. He's like riding his bike and then he falls over.
Okay.
He scrapes his knee and then somebody comes. He sees a friend and they're like, what happened to you? And he tells them like, you know, well, this happened and this happened, the Book of Logic. And so it was a whole like. It was a joke on logic, you know, and talks him through his day of like, okay. Well, this happened. So of course I had to do this. And then,
yeah,
it was just, who'd you
cast in that? Is this where you cast Josh Jackson in? No, he was in the Battery.
My buddy, David Burke, who was in the episode, Someone to Watch Over Me.
Okay.
David Burke and I did a play in New York City. And so I called David and he was the bicycle rider. And I think I may have put Ethan in, because it was his joke. I think he was in it too.
Oh, great.
But okay. We literally shot it in a day.
Yeah.
We stole located. We didn't have permits for anything. It was like really
guerrilla filmmaking.
Film school, student film.
Yeah.
And it was bad. So
okay.
But then anyway, yes, The Battery was next. And that was a real legit. That was almost a 25-minute short film.
Yes.
Really amazing actors, including Joshua Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry Joshua and a bunch of people. And and Ethan was in that as well. He played the baseball coach in The Battery. Ethan was in all my short films.
Oh.
He played the Little League coach for Josh Jackson. And and then my last film was 9mm of Love. And Ethan was in that as well. He plays this guy on the street that runs into the hero.
So, yes. Anyway. All righty. Are you ready for this week's episode?
I am totally ready. What's the name again?
It's called Bliss.
Bliss.
Got a good name.
I'm totally ready. See how ready I am?
See, you're blissfully ready.
This is part of the fun of this is this is in real time. We experience this. We respond to what we've seen and it's exciting. So Bliss,
really
I can't wait.
Okay. We will be right back with our recap and discussion of Bliss.
It will be a blissful recap.
Robbie and I are back from watching Bliss.
Yes, we are. And it was blissful.
Blissful.
So blissful.
No spitting, though. I mean, I was looking for the spitting aliens and they didn't show up.
Well, you know, here's how I interpret my synopsis.
Yes.
The giant alien life form.
Yes.
In a weird way was sort of like digesting the ship and eventually spit it out.
He did spit it out.
Like that, like
so you kind of were on point there.
So I just feel like I was close
at the overall theme of this episode.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna start with my haiku for Bliss.
Yes, sir.
Wormhole straight to Earth. Crew deceived, lose consciousness. Pitcher plant throws up.
Good, very good. That was solid.
Yeah, thank you.
This was a tough one for me, this limerick. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Here we go.
Let's go.
The limerick for Bliss. A wormhole to take the crew home at last. All their wildest dreams seem to be surpassed. Seven and Naomi don't take the bait. The beast has Voyager on its plate. Awakened to reality thanks to an antimatter blast.
That's good. What are you worried about? Robbie is like talking to me before we start up this recording. He's like, this is not the good one. I like that one.
Okay, good. I'm glad you do.
Where's your criticism? I'm having my snacks. What made you think this was a poopy one?
This episode made me hungry because of all the digestion. So I'm going to be eating my almonds.
Okay.
As we talk.
All right.
On theme with the digestion alien.
Oh.
Is what I'm going to be calling it.
So you're just going
to... Everybody, as you listen to this podcast, I hope you're eating a snack, digesting something.
Oh.
Kind of like the alien life form tried to digest our ship.
Oh, I see. So you're so into this episode that you're actually mimicking the episode digesting almonds.
Exactly.
Okay, exactly. I love it.
Teleplay is by Robert Doherty.
Who I have mentioned, I love his... teleplays. Mm-hmm. They're very good. They've got good humor in there. And I like his teleplays. Yes.
Yep. The story is by Bill Prady. Now, how do we know this name?
We know this name because he is the co-creator of The Big Bang Theory.
Yes, he is.
And the minute I saw that, I was shocked. I did not remember that Bill Prady had pitched the story, and obviously they purchased the story.
I have a quick anecdote about Bill Prady.
Please.
Bill Prady and I, many years back, before The Big Bang Theory, Bill Prady and I had the same agent. And I had this idea for a TV show. My agent said, hey, you should go have lunch with this writer that we represent. His name is Bill Prady. And my agent said, you know, he's got this pilot that they made, but they're going to reshoot it. I don't know if anything's going to happen with it. But if it doesn't go, you know, if his pilot doesn't go, I know he's a big Star Trek fan and he'd love to talk to you about your idea. So Bill and I went to lunch and I told him my idea. We talked about Star Trek. I had forgotten just till now that he actually said to me at that lunch, he said, oh yeah, I sold a story to Voyager. And anyway, we had a great lunch. I pitched him my idea. He goes, I love it. It sounds great. I'd love to do this show with you and develop it. We have to reshoot this, you know, sitcom that I wrote, and we have to reshoot the pilot. They didn't like the first version.
Yeah.
So once I know about that, you know, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Well, cut to that was the Big Bang Theory pilot. That was it. So
he was too busy. Oh my God.
Needless to say, he did not develop my little show idea with me, but that's Bill Prady.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Love it.
Cliff Bohl directed this episode.
Oh, we were both wrong.
Both wrong. We played the Vegas odds and lost. That's a lesson to all of you. Be careful in Vegas.
Never bet against the house. A line used by Robert J. Doherty in this script, actually.
That's right.
Okay.
Guest stars, we've got Scarlett Palmers, who we've talked about endlessly, how much we love her.
Yes.
She was awesome in this episode. Our other guest star was W. Morgan Shepherd playing Katai, the only guest star in the episode. W. Morgan Shepherd was born in London, England, and he passed away. Sad to say, he passed away in 2019.
Oh, no.
He did. In Los Angeles, he died. W. Morgan Shepherd's first job that I could find was in 1961. He did a series called Theater Night for the BBC. And I don't know exactly what the content of that was, but it was probably, he was a theater trained. He went to the Royal Shakespeare School. It was a theater actor. He probably was performing in some play that they broadcast on Theater Night in 1961. So his very first TV credit was Theater Night. But here's another fascinating fact. He is the father of the actor Mark Shepherd. Now, Mark Shepherd,
a lot of people know Mark from
Supernatural. I remember working with Mark. He was on Star Trek Voyager. He guest starred on our show. He also did a guest star on Chuck that I produced and directed. So I know Mark very well. And I directed Mark on Supernatural. So I know Mark very well. And that was his dad that played this role. So I just thought that was awesome. Oh, man.
No clue that Mark Shepherd and Morgan Shepherd were related.
Yeah.
No clue. I know both Mark and Morgan. Morgan, I met at a convention. Morgan was also in Star Trek, the reboot film, the one that J.J. Abrams did in 2008. He played the head of the Vulcan Science Academy. And he's telling... he's sort of dressing down Spock, a young Spock, basically. Mm-hmm. But he did a great job there. But I had no idea he had passed away. I'm a little bit bummed to hear that.
January 2019. All right. So there's our guest star. So let's get into our episode.
Let's do it.
First thing that happens is in our teaser, in the episode, we see this strange ship. And by the way, Morgan Shepherd as Katai looked like, to me, looked like the Beast. Looked like from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh.
His makeup. Yeah. Look like, I was like, oh, it's the Bee. He had the kind of the long hair and the, okay, and the kind of coif top and then the scary looking face. I feel like Michael Westmore did some sort of, inspiration from Beauty and the Beast. I don't know.
Okay.
That was what I took away.
But one thing I noticed, when you see inside his ship, does it remind you of Neelix's cluttered ship a little bit?
Oh, I mean, there's
stuff hanging around, moving and everything.
Well, the stuff hanging around and moving,
yeah,
you know, our sets didn't move. They weren't built up on platforms that rocked around. So everything that looks like a shake or like, mm-hmm, the ship's moving, is the camera moving, the actor moving. Mm-hmm. And then if there are hanging things, they would often put a little monofilament, like fishing line.
Oh,
and they would sort of pull it and shake it around. So between the actor shaking, mm-hmm, the camera shaking, and those things getting moved in the way that they would move if they were hanging and gravity was, you know, mm-hmm, momentum was pushing them around. So all of that was being manipulated by our special effects department. So the things that were hanging were doing. Yeah, so I noticed that too.
So the question for you is, the monofilament, the fishing line, is not detected by the camera at all? You don't
often
see
it? It's not. And if it is, it's a very easy cleanup in post.
In post-production.
Yeah. Okay. Easily clean that up and just kind of...
Gotcha. Now, did you know what was happening?
I had no idea. Yeah. No idea.
You didn't know what he was heading into. I don't think I don't know either of us.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, who is this guy?
First line of my... I was going to make that the first line of my limerick. Who is this guy?
Ty?
Because the whole teaser, I'm like, who is this guy? I kept saying, what's happening? Who is this guy?
Well, he never even says his name.
No, right? Never says his name.
Yeah, and so we have to figure that out on our own. And he's heading into what looks like an ion storm or some clouds that are opening up. I don't know what that
was. I thought he was running away from something and hiding. Yeah, that was my interpretation. This is a bad guy.
Right.
He's running away from somebody chasing him.
Yeah.
And he's going to hide out in this... Yeah. Yeah, it looks like an ion storm.
Right.
So you can't tell what it is.
Similar to the pilot of Voyager in Caretaker. We're trying to hide in that storm to get away from the Cardassians, I think.
Yeah.
So similar, but we don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is. So we go to our opening credits. We come back and the turbo lift door opens on the bridge. And the first thought I have is Kate Mulgrew's got her arm up on the side, one hand on a hip.
Yeah.
And she's like, what does she say? Wormhole?
Yeah.
And then she struts over to Tuvok station. So funny. It reminded me of, you know, often we would start scenes where we were inside these turbo lifts.
Yes.
And I don't know if you remember, but we would goof off all the time.
Yeah.
Like the doors would shut and we didn't know. You couldn't really hear outside. You'd be like, wait, are they rolling yet? You know, you're standing inside and you're telling some story or some joke or something.
Yeah.
So there was always... When I saw Kate with her arm up there, I was like, I wonder if that just happened in rehearsal. Like she accidentally got caught and was like, oh, I'm going to do that. Anyway, wormhole, she says. And she heads over to Tuvok station where they've discovered, it seems like we have discovered that there is a wormhole that seems to lead directly back to Earth.
Yes.
And Janeway's very suspicious. She's like, what? That's super convenient. Like, and everybody... Tuvok, Chakotay, they all agree that it's suspicious. And I think Chakotay says, let's send a probe in there and check this out. Like, this
Janeway orders it. Janeway
orders
to prepare a class 5 probe because there's a lot of massive bioplasmic activity going on in this wormhole. So they're not sure what's going on. She calls for yellow alert. Does lighting change for yellow alert? Or is that just sort of like...
I think caution. Panels change or something.
Okay, maybe panels, but I didn't see a noticeable change on the set when she said that, so wasn't sure.
She even says, by the way, she goes, you know, this could be a possible deception. So she's very suspicious at the start, which is going to be important because the change in attitude for everyone is quite dramatic after this.
Yeah.
We go to the Delta Flyer, actually.
Yes.
We go to the Delta Flyer. There's Seven, Paris, and Naomi heading back from some kind of mission. They were looking for deuterium, I think, but correct. They didn't find any. And Naomi really wants to help. She wants to be a part of the crew. She's yeah. trying really hard. And
yeah.
and Seven is just not having it. Seven's no. like, nothing for you to do here. And so Paris goes, hey, come on down. Come on over here. Fly the ship, which I can't believe.
Were you shocked to see Naomi, though? In this scene, I was like, wait a minute, she's on a mission with you guys? Like, I was a little bit like, oh, that's different, which is, yeah. it's fine. It's, I don't have a problem with it, but I was like, oh, that's different.
I kind of liked it, honestly, that there's a kid, you know, that the whole crew is sort of adopting Naomi in a way, and that she's, a, you know, it fits her personality. I love, you know, Scarlett Palmer's energy and,
yeah.
and her enthusiasm is really good. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was
so awesome. The whole, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That was, I loved it.
All right.
I love that Paris lets her fly the ship. And then we cut to the hallway. We see Seven and Paris walking around, but Tom's carrying Naomi now.
Yeah.
She's
falling asleep. She's just like Amy, like kids do on any road trip. They're falling exactly. asleep when you get back. I love that.
And Tom's like, you know what? I'll go tell Samantha Wildman why her daughter's 2 hours late for bedtime if you go, you know, do our mission report. So Seven's like, okay, fine, mm-hmm. which I thought was very cute. We go to Astrometrics and Seven walks in and she's suddenly surprised and kind of pissed off when she walks in the door. She's like, she's a little pissed because Janeway, Chakotay, Tuvok, Harry are all there. Like, it's her office and everybody's just kind of taken over.
Tuvok there? Oh.
Yeah, Tuvok's there.
I only wrote Janeway, Chakotay, and Harry, but all right.
Yeah, Tuvok's off to the side. He kind of joins them. It's an oddly shot scene, I'll have to say. And, and Cliff Bowl normally does a really great job, but this one I was like, there was kind of weird singles of Tuvok standing by himself, and then he ends up joining at the end, and I didn't know Chakotay was there at the start. It was
okay.
It was a little bumpy for me, I gotta
all be right. honest,
the scene. Okay. But anyway, they all seem very happy. But Seven is very suspicious about this, that they fill Seven in on, we may have found this wormhole. And Seven's like, the odds are infinitesimal that there would be a wormhole coincidentally right here that goes straight to Earth. Like,
exactly.
What are the odds of
that? Yeah.
But they're very happy about it. Different than the bridge. So already they're starting to be much more optimistic.
Yeah. We have the never bet against the house line from Janeway here as well.
Yeah.
But it is strange. You're seeing this optimism from the crew and Seven is not buying it at all. Yeah. She feels her, you know, her spidey senses are tingling. She doesn't know what's going on, but she knows something's wrong. That's it.
Yeah. One thing I noticed in this episode, I don't know if you did, is there's a lot of scenes where people are talking. And then at the end of the scene, the camera's pushing in on Seven, but people keep talking off camera.
Yes. Yes.
It happened like three or four times. And I was like, we never do that.
No.
We never like have these strange off-camera conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it happened in here as they're walking out the door, or as camera's pushing in on Seven, left alone, and they're all chattering away in the background. Yeah.
And the volume gets dimmer and dimmer on their conversation. It's sort of just, it's an interesting choice for sure.
It was an unusual technique because we don't normally do that. Our dialogue is either on camera and important and clean.
Yeah. And you hear everything. The volume
you hear
is
everything.
Where it's supposed to be at. There's no type of fade to black kind of a sound thing. It's very clear. So you're right.
I also got to say, by the way, and we're going to get to a couple places where I noticed this, but I thought the score in this episode was phenomenal.
Yes.
The score was
good.
And we always have a great score. It's always composed. It's performed by an entire
symphony. You know,
40-piece symphony or whatever the number is. Every episode has great music, but this one in particular to me just felt a little bigger and more cinematic and kind of classic than I normally notice, you know.
Right.
It didn't have the same kind of little sounds and qualities. This one seemed different for some reason.
So. I agree. We're in Janeway's ready room right now, and Seven reports that she has finished running her diagnostic, and she says the neutrino levels are extremely erratic. And then Janeway's like, oh no, wait a minute, it's okay. You know those like faint transmissions that we heard, or faint signals? Guess what? Those are Starfleet transmissions to us, and they have told us that the neutrino flux is nothing to worry about. So Janeway's clearly convinced that this is the real deal.
Yeah.
Or at least she's feeling more confident that this is the real deal. This wormhole will lead back to Earth. Now Seven starts bringing up some old adage that the doctor taught her, look before you leap. And then Janeway comes back with her little old, you know, saying, which is he who hesitates is lost. And I thought, oh my goodness, all these little sayings are popping in and popping out. Mm-hmm. And that's when Chakotay enters and he has a letter, a second letter from Mark. And he says he's jealous. So now the JC shippers are happy.
Yeah.
They're like,
oh. This was an odd little exchange because
it really was.
It was like she got a second letter and she started smiling like a little, you know, like, ooh, yeah. This is exciting. And she right. even turned away like it's a secret letter.
Yeah.
And she says something about apparently Mark's engagement was broken off.
Right.
And
so now he's back on the market. She's happy about that.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, that's anti-JC shipper.
It's anti-JC. Right. Exactly. And then, but then at the end, they had one of those off-camera conversations where she's like, how could I possibly... what did
go
she
on
say?
Without you kind
yeah.
of a thing.
Yes. How am I supposed to run a starship without you?
Yeah.
And he's like, you'll do fine. And
yeah.
it was just a yeah. it was a bit of a yo-yo of
it Jason was a yo-yo Pepper. Conversation
mm-hmm. By the way, my last thing on this scene is
yeah
the very top of the scene when we walk in, Janeway's bringing some coffee around to her desk and you see that she's got pads on the desk.
Okay.
She had more pads than I've ever seen any character ever have. And she had this box where she was like filing the pads, which I've never seen.
She had a pad filing system.
Filing system.
How many pads were on the table?
I don't know. I felt like 10, 12 pads.
Wow.
It was with a lot. Wow. Usually somebody's got one pad.
One pad.
Or maybe like
two.
You know, maybe two, but she had Max. A bunch of pads. I'm just going to point that out. And yeah. And the pad filing system, which was pretty cool. I love office supplies. So when I see that many pads and a nice organization, love office supplies. I love post-its and highlighters and
okay.
staplers,
okay.
all that stuff.
I didn't know that. Now I know what to get you for Christmas.
Office supplies.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of them. I wonder if there's like an office supply closet on Voyager, you know?
Yes, it's just off the bridge, actually.
Yeah. Go get another pack of paper. Go get another, I don't know.
Go get another pad to replace. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Some post-it pad. A post-it pad. I love that.
We go to a ship shot next, and then we're in the Borg alcove.
Yeah, Cargo Bay 1.
And we see that Seven is trying to access Janeway's personal logs.
Her log entries. Mm-hmm.
And she's denied by the computer, access denied.
Yeah, restricted.
And suddenly she walks over across the room, pulls a panel off the wall, does some Borg stuff to it, whatever she does.
Yep.
She Borgifies it.
Yeah.
And now she goes back, access granted. If she could do that,
she could take over the ship.
She could totally take over. Like, does Janeway know that she can do that?
Well, that's not clearly cool. Yeah, no, that was surprising to me too. I thought, my goodness, look at this. Yeah. She just
hacked right into it with hacked. Just like pulls a panel off the wall. Anyway, she does access them and looks at, I think, three different entries.
Right.
The first entry, tons of skepticism,
yep.
very skeptical. Mm-hmm. The second one, a little more optimistic. And the third one, very optimistic. And it happens very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So this concerns Seven. Seven thinks that this is just too coincidental and that they would have read some of this information scientifically. The data should be there. And there's no data to support Correct. What's happening right now. Mm-hmm. We find Seven coming down a hallway from Cargo Bay 1.
Mm-hmm.
And Neelix catches up. Neelix calls from behind. He says, Annika?
Annika?
Annika Hansen? She says, there's no one here by that name. Which is appropriate for this episode. She has no emotional connection to Earth.
Therefore, no,
that's why we learn that she's not being given these fantasies, these hallucinations. Is
right.
She has no...
And neither does Naomi.
Naomi doesn't
because
either.
She was born on Voyager, so therefore she doesn't even know her. So the two individuals that have never stepped foot on Earth are, and also the Doctor because he's a hologram. Mm-hmm. There's no influence by this organism on their brain patterns, right?
Yeah.
So
But Neelix catches up with Seven, and he's got a letter for her. It's from her aunt, I guess, who she also has no connection to. And her aunt's very looking forward to meeting her on Earth. And she's like, that's cool, but I don't care. Right. She doesn't really care.
No.
Neelix shares that he's been appointed the ambassador to the, I think he said, Lantorian sector.
Yeah, I turned on the subtitles to see what that said. It sounded like Lanturian, but then it was spelled LANT UAN. So Lantuan sector. Lantuan sector. They wrote down. Yeah. Okay. So
interesting.
Might be right. Might be wrong too.
The only reason it matters is because he says that he was appointed the ambassador to the Lantorian or Lantun section, whatever. And then his punchline is, well, I guess they thought that I'd have a flair for quadrupeds. I was like, and then there's this awkward moment and Seven leaves. And I was like, was that supposed to be a punchline? I couldn't quite tell.
I don't know.
It was an odd little celebration of his ambassadorship.
Yeah. It's a little odd.
It was kind of like comedy adjacent, but not really. It was like charming, but not funny.
Yes.
And usually Ethan will squeeze out any kind of laugh he can, but he could not squeeze a laugh out of that dialogue. No. There's nothing to be had there. Mm-mm. We go to the mess hall and Seven enters the mess hall. And I noticed in this scene that the background is super animated. They're like all excited
gosh.
And they're all, everybody's talking. You can hear, you know, little parts of conversations. They all have letters from Earth.
Yes.
And I said to myself, when we filmed those scenes where it was supposed to be lots of chatter, the actors couldn't talk. The background actors could not say anything.
Yeah, they were just mouthing their conversation.
It was all miming. So it was literally all of that animated energy that you see when Jerry Ryan walked into that set on action.
Is silent.
Everybody was just going, it was totally silent. I was just
imagining. And the loop group adds in the dialogue.
Yeah, the loop group in post, they add all that chatter and all those conversations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was just, I was recalling those moments where you have this lively, you know, room where everybody's supposed to be making noise, but there's nothing. There's no sound at all.
Not even a pin dropping. Yes.
It was funny.
It is funny.
But she comes in. Paris is making himself a turkey sandwich or something.
Yeah, you're actually eating. You're chewing a little bit. So I was like,
eating. I pulled something off with some tongs.
Yeah.
I poured a little tea.
You had your business.
I waved to somebody coming by. Yeah, I wrote down a note. I think I was trying to keep up with Bob Picardo.
Yeah.
And his prop acting. He always has a million props. And I was
like, giving Bob Picardo a run for his money. Oh, yes, you were. Very impressed.
Working the props really hard and the background.
But it was smooth, man. My note was like, Robbie's physicality is seamless. There's no jerkiness. It was very smooth and very believable. And I thought, oh, cool.
Thanks, buddy. Nice.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, so Seven asks him if he's gotten any messages and he heard about this, and he goes, oh yeah, I got a letter. I got a letter, an invitation for a job as a test pilot in Australia
adjacent to New Zealand. It's New Zealand adjacent.
And Seven is hopeful for a minute, like, oh, Tom must be skeptical. He seems a little skeptical.
Yeah.
And she's like, so, you know, do you believe this? And he goes, oh yeah. Are you kidding? I've already accepted this job. Yeah,
believe it. I already wrote back and accepted it. So.
Yeah. Wah, wah, yeah. Wah.
So she's like, he's drinking the Kool-Aid as well. So she realizes she doesn't have an ally in Tom Paris, unfortunately.
So she goes looking for one in sick bay.
Mm-hmm.
She goes into sick bay and activates the EMH.
Yeah.
Tells the doctor that she thinks the crew is being deceived about this wormhole. And
he doesn't even know.
What wormhole?
Yeah.
So she goes, you know, I think you need to investigate. So he says he's going to try to bring some of the crew in for some physicals as a cover to try to see what's going on, if there's any physiological explanation. Yeah. And then Chakotay calls, says, Seven, we need you on the bridge.
Right. But she finds an ally, which is good. She has one person on her side, and that is the doctor.
But he's not much help at this point because he's like, there's a wormhole.
Yeah. He needs time to catch up to get up to speed here. Now we're on the bridge and there is considerable interference in the images that we're getting. Harry clears it up. And now we see a beautiful image of Earth on the view screen. Mm-hmm. And we are about 53 minutes away from this wormhole. So
oh my gosh. Very exciting. Yeah. Very close. Yeah. They get an image from the other side. yeah, Harry clears it up, and they basically say, I think Janeway says, let's prepare to go to the Northern Hemisphere. Starfleet headquarters is our destiny. They're going to head right in. Like, the writers are writing this like, oh my gosh, this is when it's happening.
She should have said, destination San Francisco, Starfleet headquarters, specifically Admiral Paris's office. We're going to fly right in there.
Right
into
it.
Do. Yeah.
It was very specific. So as we prepare, we think we're 53 minutes away. We go to astrometrics, and Seven is running a gravimetric scan of this wormhole. She magnifies a grid, one of the grids of the wormhole, and she sees the outline of something that looks like a vessel. So she hails it. She hails it again.
Katai shows up. He's on screen for a second, and he says, look, you've been deceived. Turn around. Go back. And then the last thing he says before everything fritzes out is a very cryptic line. He says, he knows what you want. And then fritzes out. Tuvok enters. Seven is trying to deal with the power loss. She does not understand what has happened. And Tuvok says, oh, all the power to astrometrics has been rerouted to the navigational array per Captain Janeway until we get through this wormhole. And then she tells him what's been going on in terms of this vessel that she found and this conversation. Tuvok hits a couple buttons and says, hey, I have no record of the transmission with this alien ship. And Seven says, well, sensors are clearly malfunctioning. And then she tells Tuvok, you are being manipulated. He doesn't really agree with what she's saying. And he says, I think your thinking is flawed. Yes.
Your logic is flawed. The data must be flawed. And he says, no, your logic is flawed.
And then he says to her, your access to astrometrics is now restricted. So he's basically told her you can't even come in here anymore. So everything that she's trying to do, she gets hit with this roadblock that she has to get around.
And next we go to cargo bay. And she's now in there trying to access from a station in cargo bay.
Yeah, anything.
And she hears this noise.
Yes.
And so we think, oh, this is going to be the cause of all this problem. So she sneaks over. So there's kind of a creepy, you know, scary movie suspense thing. She comes over.
Good music from our symphony orchestra.
Great music from the symphony.
Yeah.
And she finds Naomi behind one of these cargo things.
Yeah.
And she's got her Flotter doll, by the way.
She does. Doll.
The one Seven is like, state your intentions. I love the way that she talks to Naomi. It's hilarious.
I love it.
Naomi says, I'm hiding in here because everybody's acting weird. They're smiling all the time, which I loved.
Yes.
I love that she said that because we did. Everybody.
Everyone's like, hey.
Yeah, we're going to Earth. Everybody's so happy. But Naomi's hiding because everybody's acting weird. And she says, you know, everybody's acting like Earth is the greatest place in the universe. I love her like kid-like attitude in here. Earth is stupid. Yeah. It's so dumb. She's like, Voyager is my home, not Earth. By the way, I made a note here. I was like, wait, season 5, Naomi was born season 2. I was like trying to do the math. Like, I want a cheat sheet. I know that she's half alien and there was a gestation period that was long. I want a cheat sheet on Naomi Wildman's aging cycle. Like with her alien. What? Like, how long was Sam pregnant? 2 years?
Yeah.
She was pregnant 2 years, but now then she had the baby, and then the baby grew up in 2 years. Now she looks like she's 10. I don't know. I just want a cheat sheet so I know about Naomi, you know.
Well, maybe, 3 years in human years is actually 10 in half Qatarian, half human years, right? The Qatarian dad provided the quick advancement in her maturation process is my only guess.
Yeah, but she was Samantha Wildman was pregnant for a long time because it was season 2 before. It was well over a year before. Anyway, you get what I'm saying.
I do. We do need a little. Yeah,
all
we
the
need
numbers. Someone. I want the math. I want the data. I want to know about Qatarian human combo.
Yes.
Hybrids. I need to know that.
Agreed.
Anyway, so basically Seven says to Naomi, like, you and I seem to be the only ones that are not affected by this. Like, you're not smiling all the time. Everybody's acting weird. You're right, Naomi. Stay here.
Yeah.
Which is important that she has Naomi stay right there.
Don't move. Stay right
Don't
there.
Move. Stay here. Hide until I return. Anyway, we go to sick bay. Seven walks in.
No doctor.
No doctor. She activates the EMH, but we hear off camera, please state the nature of your medical emergency.
Yes.
And Tom enters, which I love.
Tommy boy.
I'm now the new EMH.
You are.
And Tom explains to Seven that, yeah, we've taken the doctor offline to protect his program from being damaged.
Per Starfleet's orders.
Per Starfleet's orders, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes.
And Tom also says to her, oh, you know, I can handle any medical emergency that the doctor can. What?
Yeah. He prefaces it by saying, I know this is difficult to believe, but I can handle any medical program. And I started thinking, any medical problem? You know that much about medicine? That's did you
like,
what?
Something's off.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing. We don't even need the doctor. We just have Tom Paris. We don't even need a doctor.
By the way, I catch now and then people saying to Tom Paris, ensign. Blah,
that's
blah,
right.
Blah.
You're still an ensign.
Every time I hear it, I'm like, wait, what?
Will
I? Oh, yeah, I'm an ensign right
you're
now.
You're still an ensign.
Okay.
Okay.
So we go out into the corridor and Seven's waiting for a turbo lift. The doors open and it's Chakotay and a security team
with phasers.
Stepping out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with phasers. And they basically say they are there to deactivate her Borg implants. And then she says, well, you can't do that without the doctor. You need the doctor to do that. And he's mm-hmm. offline.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, no, we just need to put you into stasis until we're home. It's too dangerous, this trip through the wormhole.
Yeah, they mentioned something about the trip through the wormhole will pass through Borg territory or something. Yes. And that your implants may you know,
be
alert them to our presence. So again, more weird responses and answers.
And she knows it. She knows it, but she's trying to figure out what is going on here. But I like at the end of the scene where he basically goes, resistance is futile.
Yeah.
He says to her, like, flip the tables there.
I would have loved a reaction shot of Seven just rolling her eyes to that comment. Just, oh, God. And then that's how we get out of that scene. I think we're in the bridge next.
We go to the bridge. Everybody's just excited.
I wrote was happy crew. Happy crew.
I wrote, it's a super smile festival on the bridge. It was literally, everybody was just like,
oh my God.
It was like everybody had too much coffee
or laughing gas at the dentist or something. So happy.
The other thing I wrote here that I do not want to miss is Tom Paris's bangs.
What?
When did Tom, did I ever agree? I have bangs.
Did you
have those? Are bangs?
Are you kidding me? I have to go watch it again now to see that.
In this scene, and it's in a couple of scenes, it's bang adjacent, but these are full on bangs. Like in this scene with this big super smile festival going on, I'm like, I got the super smile and the bangs happening. And
well, I'm going to say, I mean, if you're super happy, your hair becomes super happy and bangs just show up. That's
bangs
what it
are
is.
Happy hair.
Bangs are happy hair for Tom Paris, at least.
I guess so.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. It was a tragedy. it was a phase, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea why. I think maybe I just cut my hair. I got my hair cut real short and they didn't know. It wasn't enough hair to do the normal.
So is it only in this scene? Are all the other scenes your
all
hair?
All the scenes you can
normal?
See the bangs a bit, but this is just
super banging
disaster. This is hardcore banging.
All right. Well, I'm sorry you're extra bangy in that scene. I apologize. Yeah.
But we go to the Borg alcove off the Super Smile Fest.
Yes.
We go to the Borg alcove and she's pretending she's been taken, detained by Chakotay and the security team. And she pretends to adjust her regeneration parameters in a console there, punches some buttons, and then heads into her alcove area.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly a force field erects and Chakotay, Borg force field. And Chakotay and the security team can't get to her.
No.
They're trapped in this force field that she's created around them. And then Seven calls for Naomi, who's smart move. She told her to stay there. Now she's going to need her.
Yeah.
And she tells Naomi, if they try to do anything, if the console alerts her or something. Right?
Yeah, she basically tells Naomi, if this portion of this console starts flashing, you need to enter this combination of buttons that I'm going to push. Let me show you this. Do you get this? Because on the bridge, Janeway has told Harry, can you get through this force field? Can you, eliminate the force field?
And Harry's
field?
So like, yeah.
He's working. I should be able to do this.
I should be able to do this.
Yes.
And
essentially,
by the way, she shows Naomi this combination. It's like bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
Like 6 or 8, 10 buttons.
Yeah.
I watched it 2 or 3 times. I'm like, I can't remember.
I can't remember that either. Yeah. It was like,
how did this 2-year-old Qatarian human hybrid who God knows how fast they grow up? Maybe the brain function is also extra fast because I couldn't remember it.
I agree. And I'm going to say, you know, that game Simon, they should have called it Naomi is what they should have called that game. And yes, well, so Harry does try to do a few things and that makes the little sensor start flashing. So Naomi enters the little Simon code and that basically locks out Harry and it keeps the force field up. Seven says, I'm going to now perform a site-to-site transport. Mm-hmm. She grabs a phaser rifle and she transports over to engineering, where we see Seven materialize and quickly take out your beloved Torres.
It's a bloodbath in there. She shoots B'Elanna and Roxanne Dawson falls to the ground in slow motion.
Yeah.
She turns over to two other engineers. Bam,
knocks them
slow
out.
Motion. Yeah. They go to slow motion and they're doing their own stunts. So this was our,
that
extras.
Was them. That's right.
That was extras. That was Roxanne.
Yeah.
All doing good crashes into walls and falls, but it was shot slow motion. And one thing I made a note of is if you're having actors do this kind of stunt work, it's a really smart idea to do a slow motion because it makes it look cool.
Yes.
Like if you saw Roxanne or those extras falling in real time.
Yeah.
It would not look
so cool. True. And I would like to say instead of bloodbath, I want to call it a stun bath because they were stunned.
It was a stun bath. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yes, down they go, shoots them. And then she erects
another Borg force field.
Force field around engineering.
Yeah.
Erects the force field around engineering. Mm-hmm. We go to the bridge. Paris says she's trying to shut down the impulse drive. So she's trying to shut this down.
Yeah.
Tuvok comes in. He can't get into engineering because this force field is up. Mm-mm. Janeway says, what does she say? She says,
send an EM surge to the station where she's working at. And that is what just fritzes Seven and she falls backward. I think that she should have fell backwards slow-mo too. That would have
I made that note.
Yeah,
fall in slow-mo. And I was like, oh, the other guys fall.
The other guys fell, yes. Engineering is the place where everyone falls slow-mo.
They should fall in slow motion.
They should have.
But she did get that EM pulse sent through. I felt bad for her because that's a big shock. And you could see it on her nanoprobes or her implants.
Do you remember the last time an EM surge was sent through a console station? Who got the... Okay. The Hirogen. Remember the Hirogen guy?
That's right.
That was sitting there. You must leave our... And he falls back. So
That's right. So the ship enters the wormhole at this point.
And from the angle that we see from the view screen, it still looks beautiful. It's kind of a light thing. And we're like entering into the light tunnel when you pass away. You know, you're heading through this beautiful little wormhole of light. But then for the reverse angle, once we're in, it clearly looks like the jaws of some type of large creature closing on Voyager after it gets in. Not a wormhole at all. No.
Nope.
Nope.
And as we're going into this wormhole, a.k.a. monster creature.
Yeah.
We cut to Naomi hiding behind the boxes and the boxes are falling over, which later on we see a cut on her head. So that was great continuity tracking there. And I love that you got Naomi in a stunt, really, you know, little Scarlet Palmer.
Yes.
They put her in a safe distance away from those falling crates, but it felt like she was in jeopardy. I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote down here, that doesn't look like any wormhole I've ever seen before. we go to a little commercial break at that point, and then we come back and we're in the hall and it's very dreamy looking.
Yeah, dream sequence looking, yes.
Here's our dream sequence montage.
Yeah.
Neelix is meeting Starfleet admirals in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to the bridge and everyone is looking at Earth and it's beautiful, crystal clear now, not a distorted, you know. No.
And
image.
Just everyone's elated too. Janeway, Harry, and
the
Tom.
Smile Festival.
So excited.
Continues.
Smile Fest. Exactly.
Smile Fest is still going on. I remember shooting this, by the way.
Okay.
They had to bring in a special light that was really bright. And because I sat down front, whenever it was.
You got the brunt of it, didn't you?
I could feel the heat. I mean, when that light went on, it was like, it was hot. Like it was burning. It was a hot light. It was really, I don't know what kind of light they used, but it was, I remember when I saw the scene, I'm like, oh, that's the scene.
Yeah, I do remember this. And I remember being happy that I was at operations further away.
Yeah, you were in the back, so you didn't feel the heat.
No.
The light spilled on you, but they had that light right up by the edge of the set.
Yeah, yeah.
And whew, it was hot.
Yeah, and a nice transition, though, from dream sequence to pulling back to see everyone unconscious. I did like that little segue.
Agreed.
And
agreed.
Also the music, really, what the music immediately changes when you pull back.
This is where I wrote it down. The music in here is awesome for this whole montage. It's great, great score.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. It was wonderful.
Because all of that was MOS though, right? I mean, there's no dialogue. There's nothing.
No dialogue. It's just music. Mm-hmm. It's a music montage.
Right.
We see Tuvok meet his wife. But each of these fantasies that's shot with some kind of filter on the lens and looking extra bright and extra beautiful is transitioned into it's a fantasy because each of us is lying on the floor
unconscious,
passed out.
Yeah,
I wish I had been drooling. I wanted when I saw the episode, I was like, oh, why didn't I drool?
Hey, when you were on the ground, were the bangs gone? Just wondering if they styled your hair back up.
They weren't quite as noticeable.
Okay, but, all right.
Oh, the bangs.
Naomi appears, right?
Naomi is fine.
Yeah, see the carnage. Yeah.
Yep. She goes and sees the carnage. She goes into engineering and she hits the force field as she walks in.
Love
so she
her calls. Reaction.
I know. It was great.
Such a good little actress she was. Oh my
And she calls to Seven. Seven, wake up. Seven, wake up. And she does. She turns off the force field. I love Seven's line when Naomi walks over. You're damaged. She's got the scrape on her head.
That's right.
Naomi's like, no, it's just a scrape. I'm fine. Right. I'm not damaged. We find out that the hull of the ship is demolecularizing.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what?
But it's just giving us the image that, or giving us the idea that the Voyager ship is being devoured. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's being broken down just like anything, any food in a human stomach is being broken down by the amino, by the acids. This is what's happening to the ship. Yeah.
And even Naomi goes, wait, do wormholes do that? And Sevens goes, no, they don't. Naomi says she wants to help. And Naomi says, two heads are better than one. Isn't that the Borg philosophy?
Yeah.
And Sevens busted. She's like, simplistic, but accurate. Yes.
Yes.
Two heads are better than one. And Naomi does not want to be alone here. So Seven takes her out.
Yeah. They're in the corridor.
Bring her along. I love the cute run. Seven marches off in her strong Borg way. And then there's Naomi trying to keep up running behind her.
It's very cute. They come upon an unconscious Neelix. Naomi is very distraught over seeing Neelix not conscious. And she actually reaches up with holds both hands out. Yeah, to Seven, who then picks her up.
Hold me.
Hold me now, mommy.
Hold me.
Auntie Seven.
And Seven carries her out.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute image.
Yes.
They walk past down a corridor that has windows along the side.
Okay, that's clearly our mess hall, but then it's dressed without any of the tables. Well, so where
I don't
is
think it's
this
the mess hall. So no. On the other side of the mess hall is the same window set. And it's not a corridor.
Right.
It's like where they put Tuvok's quarters sometimes.
Yes. You know, so they use that. They use that set.
I think they did, but I made a note here. I wish we had done more walk and talks down the corridor with the windows.
With the windows.
It's cool.
Yes.
But it reminds us we're on a spaceship and space is right outside. We're always in these interior corridors where you don't see anything. I wish.
Darn those budgetary restraints.
I wish we would mix it up sometimes. It would
have been nice.
Yeah. But they walk past, they look out the windows and they see what looks like the inside of this creature, this giant monster, and it's scary looking. We go into astrometrics, things are powers flickering, the hull is still demolecularizing. And on the astrometrics screen, view screen, we see Voyager is inside. We see an outline of Voyager inside this giant organic organism.
Right.
And Seven does some scans. She realizes that there are neural pathways with bioplasmic discharges, that this is a life form, and that it's 200 kilometers in diameter. It's huge.
It's massive.
Massive.
It's essentially the size of a whale. Bigger mm-hmm. than a whale. It's a massive whale.
Yes. This is our Moby Dick reference. Yes, we're starting getting to come some in. Of our. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she looks for the alien vessel again, the one she yes. saw in her earlier scans.
That's right.
She finds him. She reaches this alien. His name is Katai.
Yeah.
This is who we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Who we and saw it's in interesting.
He's very skeptical. Katai is so skeptical. He doesn't even think Seven's real. He's like, mm-hmm. you think they would send in a whole starship to save me? Yeah. And she's just, and so she says to him, look,
he thinks it's a deception.
Yeah. She says, yeah. You need to lower your shields for me to beam you aboard our vessel. Or you can just stay there and die, you know, when your shields fail. And yes. he sits there and he goes, fine. So he does it. He does it.
He tries it. She yeah. beams him into astrometrics. He looks around. He walks over to Naomi.
Very slowly. Down,
and he kind of pinches her. She's like, ow! It's very cute.
Yes.
And then he kind of touches Seven.
No, he comes to touch Seven, but then stops. He doesn't do the full touch.
Oh, I thought he yeah. touched her like no, the side of her neck or something.
No, he came close, but he didn't actually touch. He stopped.
But he says, you're real. Okay, yeah. you're real.
Yeah.
And he says that this organism is uses psychogenic manipulation or telepathy
yeah.
to trick people. And he basically says that this organism tricks them with telepathy and they see whatever they want most, their right. deepest desires that right. they will see, and it will draw them in. And then basically this organism eats them for their energy.
Yeah.
And we
learn about his plan. His plan is to be swallowed by this mm-hmm. entity or this organ, this life form. Mm-hmm. And then once swallowed, his plan was to travel to the neural plexus of this mm-hmm. organism, which kind of controls everything, and destroy that so that mm-hmm. this organism will be destroyed from the inside out. But again, this organism is a very smart being. It tricked him. And instead of being anywhere close to the neural plexus, he was definitely in the very center of the digestive tract of this mm-hmm. organism. So mm-hmm. he's been duped by the organism.
And he does say in this scene, he says, the only solution here is to destroy this. The Correct. Only way out.
Yeah.
There we is no must, other way
yeah,
out.
We must kill it. Yeah.
You have to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So they go into sick bay mm-hmm. and they activate the MH. They mm-hmm. fill in the doctor with everything that's going on. I love the doctor's line. He goes, who are you? The local monster expert? Made me laugh.
There was a lot of tension between Katai and the doctor. Like Katai yeah. would give the doctor a lot of, and I kept thinking this is sort of a win for Paris because the doctor was always messing with Paris, and now mm-hmm. Katai comes aboard and messes with the doctor. So
yeah.
he's kind of aligned. He's kind of aligned with you in a way, and
yeah, exactly.
kind of helping you out. But yeah, the doc now knows that this being has been creating false sensor readings using neurogenic telepathy to lower everyone's guard. So he has been mm-hmm. filled in on what's been happening.
Mm-hmm. And the doctor ultimately says, well, let's try and wake up some of the crew.
Yeah.
So a little time passes. We're over in the surgical bay and mm-hmm. The doctor has put a cortical inhibitor onto B'Elanna.
That's right.
And Katai says, this isn't going to work. The doctor is very confident.
That. Yeah.
Been there, done that. Yeah. Doctor's like, no.
This is going to work.
And B'Elanna does wake up.
Yes.
But when she sits up, she starts hallucinating that there are Maquis all around her.
All the dead Maquis are now alive.
Yes, they're alive.
Yeah.
And he tries adjusting the cortical inhibitor, you know,
yeah.
Levels, but nothing works. And
I do love Roxanne's acting here because she's just like, oh my God. I mean, she's good to see you.
Yes.
She's, which is so weird coming from her.
From that character, because
she's a little abrasive. So now you see sweet as sugar, B'Elanna Torres. And yes. It's like, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Very funny.
Yeah. She's on the happy gas, but it didn't work.
No.
She's back out.
Yeah.
We cut to the bridge to see that everybody is still asleep there.
Unconscious Janeway, Paris, and Kim. Yeah.
I made a note. I wish I was drooling. I wish I'd done that. I probably was in real life.
I don't even remember shooting that part where we're all lying down on the floor. Well, you're slumped over your console, correct?
Yeah, that's true.
Janeway's on the floor, on the mm-hmm. carpet, and I'm on the carpet. So, mm-hmm. and you're the only one slumped over your console, but yeah. I don't recall that lying on the ground like that. But we had a break from acting.
Yeah, it was nice. It was an easy job.
Easy job.
We go into the science lab, and Katai is studying Voyager's weapons manifest. He's trying to see if there's any weapons that maybe could be used, and talking with the doctor. He kind of tells the doctor the story of his family,
right.
And how his family encountered this creature.
Right.
And he basically came to try to save them and was too late.
Yeah, his family was on a ship called the Nakaro, and that ship had about 3,000 crew members, mostly families, including his. When he responded to the distress call, he said that nothing was left except for some fading engine emissions. And this took place 39 years ago, and he has been hunting
this guy
exactly like Moby Dick, basically. Yes. And we see all the similarities, all the parallels with the Moby Dick novel. Mm-hmm. This organism, according to the doctor, is estimated at being 200,000 years old. So clearly, this organism has been rocking the starship diet for quite a while now. The ship rocks a little bit, which scares Naomi awake. She's she's lying on a biobed. Seven comforts her. And this is when Katai sees that there are class 9 torpedoes that could do the job and possibly destroy this organism. But the doctor quickly says, now, wait a minute, this is not the Starfleet way. We're not all about just killing things exactly. that we don't understand. There's an alternate way to solve this problem that we have. What if we make Voyager less tasty and the organism expels us from its digestive tract? Seven quickly suggests that using the aliens' Tetrion-based weapons to fire at a pocket of antimatter that is released from Voyager's warp core, that would then produce an electrolytic reaction, which little Naomi says, would that be enough to make him, you know, get us out of its system? Yes. And she says, maybe.
Would that make us taste bad?
Taste bad? Yeah. Love that scene.
We go into the transporter room where Katai is headed back to his ship.
Yeah.
And Katai offers the doctor a chance to join him, which I thought was funny. Yeah. And the doctor's response is, I'm a doctor, not a dragon slayer.
Right.
Which I love.
And he says, you want me to be your Ishmael to your Ahab? So your first mate to your captain? And so another Moby Dick reference. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Robbie. Now, at one point, when you have the single on the doctor, he's standing at the transporter pad. The transporter station.
Yep.
And you can see the rocking and whatever that's going on because we're inside the digestive tract of this organism. But then when you cut back to Katai, it's locked off. There's no shaking whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So Megan said, well, maybe because it was more of a close-up on Bob and not more of a wide shot on Katai, that's why you don't notice the shaking. But I kept thinking, oh, it should have matched. But was he trying to show something different with the
doctor? I don't think so. I think it was just maybe an oversight or the
undersight.
The shot on Katai also turns into his beam out, right?
Yes.
And so they probably had to shoot that more stabilized.
They had to lock it off.
Yeah. They had to lock it off so the beam out would work.
Okay.
But you can do that. You can shoot that way. And then you can add in post a little
movement to the frame.
Optical,
right?
Yeah, yes. To the frame. You can make it an optical shake, but they didn't do that. So just a little continuity oversight.
All right. Thank you for answering.
Guess.
Okay.
We go to NG. He beams him back. Beams Katai back to his ship. Mm-hmm. And then we go to engineering. The doctor and Seven now are working on getting ready to release the antimatter.
Yeah. He's rerouted all bridge controls to engineering for Seven. And Seven's like, oh, thank you. How convenient of you.
On Katai's ship, his ship is shaking from being digested again.
Right.
And his targeting sensors are destabilizing.
Yeah.
So, this genius plan may not work. I also made a note. There was a ton of smoke in that set. I was like, wow, poor actor. that smoke is not fun to shoot in. And you could see like the clouds of smoke they had added to the set.
Yes. Yes. My note was that Katai is kind of like an alien Fonzie from Happy Days, because he clearly fixes everything by just hitting it. He always says, don't worry. I can take care of it. And something happens and it's back to normal again. Mm-hmm. So he's okay.
So we go out to space next. So both sides are ready. We go out to space. They're ready to release the gas. They do it.
Yes.
And they release. You see this the antimatter gas coming out. We see mm-hmm. Katai's ship fire on it. Mm-hmm. It kind of explodes in this beautiful blue flame.
Yeah.
And we cut back into engineering and Seven is looking at Data and she goes, yeah it worked. We're free.
Right. We're good.
We're good. So is Katai.
And Katai's like, what about the second burst? And they're like, but we're already free. And Katai says, no, you're not. You are now under the illusion. Yes, the deception begins for Seven.
Because her desire, he says to her, because you wanted to escape so badly. He's keyed into that and he's tricking you. He's trying to give you what you, you know, make you think that you've got what you wanted.
Right.
But so she doesn't initiate.
The second burst.
They do the second burst. He fires again. And now they truly are out. We see outside in space. We see them exit this organism, this giant.
Can you do the reaction? Can you do the sound effect of being... with that. The word bliss, though, remember?
Yes.
Bliss.
Oh, yes.
Bliss. That's it.
They get blissed out of the organism.
Yes.
So they're out.
They're out, finally. They're out. The crew is safe. Voyager is safe. We're on the bridge. Janeway and company are now waking up. She's just disoriented and doesn't know what's going on. She calls down to engineering because we now know all bridge control has been rerouted to engineering. Mm-hmm. Seven answers and says, you know what? We are good to go. Just talk to the doctor. I'm going to go regenerate.
I need to regenerate. Basically, I need to take a nap.
Yeah, I need to take
a nap.
I'm
exhausted. Yeah.
I'll write my full report later. Talk to the doctor. See ya. Right. So she takes off. We have a captain's log.
We have a captain's log
saying that we have deployed a series of beacons to warn others of this bioplasmic creature. So a little safety net, I guess, to help other people. Mm-hmm. To avoid being digested by the bliss alien whale. We jump to astrometrics and we have this scene with Naomi and Seven looking at Earth on the screen.
And they're both, you know, kind of back to this idea that neither one of them really has a personal connection with
Earth.
They're not.
Yeah.
And basically Naomi's looking at it. Seven comes in like, oh, you're checking out Earth. And we learn that they don't care about her. Neither one of them. They're like, Naomi's like, I don't really care, but my mom cares. So I guess, I guess it's cool.
I guess it's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice, it's a sweet little scene with the two space orphans out there.
Yeah.
And then we go back to Katai's ship.
Yeah.
And
Ahab just goes right back into the mouth of the whale.
Right back in. He's determined. Determined to fight this thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There you go. There's bliss.
What is your theme? What is your lesson from this
episode? My lesson is don't be fooled by your fantasies. That's, you know, if something is too good to be true, it probably is.
Okay. Yeah.
What about you?
My lesson is a lesson from the doctor, which is you don't always need to resort to violence.
I like it. Good.
Okay.
Nice.
What is your rating of this episode?
I give this, I enjoyed this episode a lot. I'm going to give it a 7.8.
Okay.
I'm not going to explain all the math that I did. I did a lot of research, calculations, numbers, data was involved, and I came up with 7.8. What about you?
I'm going to give it a 7.3.
Oh.
7.3.
Okay.
Right. Please tell us, what
Our
do we have?
Captain and Admiral Patreon members' average rating of bliss. The vote is in. The number is... 7.2.
Oh, I am closer.
If I'm this the was highest. The,
you are the highest.
What the heck?
I know. You
I
would not be selected
episode.
For the showcase showdown on Price is Right being that
I mean, it was
high.
A, it was a little thin on the ensemble quality that's always a big go-to for me, but there was some real relatable emotional stakes here and the classic sort of Ahab story that, that was going on I thought was really cool. So
nice character development for Naomi Wildman, a little bit for Seven. So
okay, that's there you go.
All right, thanks everyone for joining Robbie and I for our recap and discussion of the episode Bliss. Join us next week when Robbie and I will tackle Dark Frontier Part One.
Ooh,
I like the name of that.
It'll be a smile fest.
Maybe. Will you have bangs? We don't know. We'll see.
I'm going to wear bangs for one of these.
I think you.
With these Delta Flyers.
I think you should.
I'm going to just kind of comb it down.
Just a little bang it out, man.
Bang it out product in there and get a nice
cool
bang look.
I love it.
That'll be cool. Okay. All right. Next week, let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.